More than a few years ago, when I was in college, I was required to read a book by Colin Norman, and it was entitled The God That Limps, Science and Technology in the 80s. Yes, the 1980s. I tell you this not because I endorse this author's thoughts, because I don't. I don't even encourage you to read the book. I remember very little of it, and I consider that a good use of my memory. But I was intrigued by the way he approached this topic. He was referring to Greek mythology, talking about a god, little g god, that is viewed as powerful. In Greek mythology, all of the gods were powerful. And there was one particular god here, which I'll use the Roman name of Vulcan because I can't pronounce the Greek name, but this god of Vulcan was supposed to be the god of technology. He was the god of the blacksmith and the artisan, the mankind who actually put his hands and used ingenuity and his brain to create. That was who this god was supposed to be for, the god of technology. And his idea was to equate this god of technology to technology. Now, it's interesting because one of the stories relating to Vulcan is that he was thrown by Zeus off of Mount Olympus and fell for 9 days and nights until he landed on the earth, and he was injured, and therefore he limped. So if you think about this, you have sort of a juxtaposition here of a powerful being that is imperfect. But I want you to think about that as we talk some about technology today. Technology is a very powerful thing. It can be very awe-inspiring as we look at what mankind has put his mind to do. What we don't realize is that, or maybe some of us don't realize, is that what mankind has achieved is just a tiny sliver of what God is capable of. And while we may look at what mankind has thought up and what he's created, we may not think about the fact that all he's doing is bolting together things that God has already created. The natural law is already there, and mankind all of a sudden has an epiphany, and he puts things together, and voila, something dramatic happens, and God probably yawns to that. And yet we can be awestruck. And if we don't have a strong foundation in our faith in Jesus Christ, we may become awestruck with that. We may find ourselves worshiping at the feet of the God of technology. So think about this. The juxtaposition of a powerful being with a weakness. And relate that to technology as we talk about it tonight and think about how that relates to technology. Is technology in and of itself a good or evil thing? Or is it the way that mankind applies that that makes it good or evil? If we think back to the printing press, in about 1440, Johann Gutenberg invented the printing press. Now, the printing press had been around before that time period, but it was fairly imperfect. It used wooden blocks much of the time, which tended to wear out very easily or warp or break. And it was very labor-intensive, and it was very expensive to create things with that technology. So Johann Gutenberg puts together an alloy of metals, lead is one of them and about three others, I believe, that made a good, durable piece of movable type, and then he put those together into a printing press, and he was able to, on his first printing press, print 3,600 pages per day. That was a quantum leap in the capabilities of that time. Now, we look at Johann Gutenberg, and specifically the printing press, and we credit him with a very dramatic change in spirituality, because prior to that time, most people were uneducated, most people were not literate, and most people didn't have access to books, especially to the Word of God. The Word of God had been withheld from the masses during that time period. And all of a sudden, the Bible now can be recreated and can be done on a grand scale. In fact, 15 years later, Johann Gutenberg, with borrowed money, publishes 300 of what's called the Gutenberg Bible. And it just exploded from there. The Word of God now was rampant across the country, and people were desiring that. They wanted it so much they were becoming literate in order to have access to the will of God. What a magnificent thing. And we look fondly upon the printing press, that invention of technology. But are all things good that have been printed? Clearly not. Even in that time period, I'm sure it took no time at all before somebody started printing things that were reprehensible. And it certainly continues to today. When we look at the things that are printed, we can be ashamed of a great number of things that are printed. It wasn't the technology. It was a tool. Man will become depraved given the opportunity, and he has certainly done that with that technology. In 1927, the inventor Philo T. Farnsworth invented something called the image dissector. It was one of over 300 patents he had before his death. But this one was crucial. This one was the foundation invention for what we today call the television. It was a pretty amazing thing to be able to take an image over here and to dissect it into smaller pieces, communicate that over some medium, and over here put it all back together so that you have another image. In that day, it must have been a pretty amazing thing to have watched that occur. He is called the father of television because of that invention. Now, he built upon the work of many others, but it was a great step forward for mankind to have television. If you think about all the things that build upon that technology today, phones, laptops, tablet PCs, televisions, ATM machines, anything that projects an image to you is built upon this technology that really came together in 1927. And was really, in very few years before that, there was really no good concept of this technology. Quote, there's nothing on it worthwhile, and we're not going to watch it in this household, and I don't want it to be a part of your intellectual diet, unquote. Those words are attributed to Philo by his family. He was very unimpressed. The father of television was very unimpressed with what his technology, what his invention was being used for. Was it the technology that was the problem? Mankind had to decide what the content was that was going to be on the television. And they chose that, and the man who did the inventing was very unimpressed. In a 1996 interview, his wife Elma, whose nickname was Pim, Farnsworth described how she and the father of television, Philo, watched the first man walking on the moon, live on Philo's invention. We were watching it, and when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, Phil turned to me and said, Pim, this has made it all worthwhile. Before then, he wasn't too sure. Now, we probably can identify with those thoughts, because if you have a television in your home, you know that there's a lot of things that come across that are not wholesome. There can be some very good things that are on television. But it comes down to the way man is using that tool, does it not? That invention, that technology in and of itself, isn't good or bad. It's a ubiquitous, ambiguous thing until we use it. And then we reap the results of what we have chosen. If we were to be so unhappy with television, we would want to remove that root from the technology tree, then we would be losing all kinds of things. Anything that projects an image to you would be gone. We would also be missing the ability to show a young pregnant mother her ultrasound, to see the life within her womb, yet unborn. We would not be able to do arthroscopic surgery, to make a small incision in the body, and insert some tools and a camera into your body through a little tiny slit and fix health problems. There would be no minor heart surgery. You may argue there's none of that anyway. But all of you that have had stents put in, it would be now open heart surgery if Philo had not done what he had done in 1927. the technology is independent of good or evil. It's how man uses it that makes the difference. It must be true. I saw it on the internet. Famous last words of many researchers. Probably many of you as well. I know it has been for me at times, because while the internet's an absolutely amazing thing, and you look at it from its inception to its growth, and the amount of information that is on the internet, and when you want to find out something about something, you'll be able to find something on the internet. You're not always sure what the something is, but you can find something about it. There's a lot of truth there. There's a lot of not so truth there, because anybody that has an opinion about anything can put it there. One of the greatest uses of the internet is for pornography. It is one of the largest e-commerce market shares. It is one of the largest types of content that is on the internet. Pornography is a direct frontal attack, especially upon men, but in a growing number of women who are consumers of pornography, and it is an absolute predator to our children. It has taken what God has made a wonderful thing, a loving sexual relationship between a man and a woman in marriage, and turned it into some sexual free-for-all, where we have all kinds of abuse and unwanted pregnancies and aggressive behavior, perversions, a distortion of what that natural relationship is destroyed by the use of a technology. And I imagine that we all feel very strongly about that. We've probably been exposed to it in some fashion. In one way or another, we're at least aware of it. And if you have the internet in your home, which most of you probably do, that's a great responsibility that you've taken upon yourself. Not one to be taken lightly. Did all of this happen before the internet? Did man ever have a distorted view of what a healthy sexual relationship was, of what a healthy marriage was, of what was perversion and was not perversion, and abuse, and you name it? What didn't happen before the internet? Mankind, in fact, if you look at the time today, it's probably not as bad today as it has been in the past. It's maybe great on our nerves when we see things happen. We see our society sinking to depths in some cases, but you know, we can read the Bible and see that there were a tremendous number of horrible things that have happened in the past. The internet didn't create it. The internet certainly makes it easier to access. And so with that comes responsibility. A technology that brings great reward, but also brings risk. You know, I don't think I've ever seen a technology that's quite as powerful. Those of you that are on Facebook, whether you're real active on it or not, it's amazing to think about the fact that we can communicate all around this world almost instantaneously. And that can be for good. I've watched a lot of people be encouraged when they're feeling down because of their ability to communicate over the internet. Can you imagine during the time of Paul trying to satisfy that somebody 1,000 miles away? How encourage him? Well, how many months will it take me to get a letter to him, and what will have happened in the meantime? Well, now we can, boom, we can give them encouragement. Now, the opposite is true. We can also say things that in times past might have been, I may have made a fool of myself to just a half a dozen of my closest friends. Now I can do it to a half a million of my not-so-close friends. It's a big thing that we have to think about, a big responsibility, but it comes with a lot of good things. I'm really encouraged by the power of the internet, and there's no other medium that I'm aware of that can do what the internet does. And yet it comes with barbs. It's difficult. It's challenging for us to deal with. But it is a medium that can spread the gospel like no other. You can have access to billions of people based on what you put on the internet. What a tool. You walk down the street and you knock on a door, you may get to talk to one or two people. You put it on the internet and you now have access to billions. What a tool. If you haven't looked, go to onetruechurch.net. That's an activity that some in this room have been involved in to put together the truth and make it in a way that is palatable to people, to expose it. You know, we're not real big about doing things like television evangelism and so forth, and that's fine. We make a decision on what the right thing to do is, but this is one that's relatively easy, and it's at our fingertips. I wonder if the apostles were here today, what they would be doing. Would they be leveraging this technology because it's powerful? Or would they say, I don't know, I like this scroll and a quill so well. You know? Sometimes I think maybe that's where we're at. We like our scroll and quill too well to want to change what we're doing. Electronic communication devices are important to me because I work for Sprint and I'm involved in a lot of that. My livelihood right now is wrapped up in that. But if you think about the types of devices and what comes with them, from phones to small tablets to laptops, the ability to communicate instantaneously is a great boon. It's much of what we got with the internet and the ability to instantly communicate. It's an expectation for us now. You know, I think back to when I was a kid, and you know, if I wasn't home on time, then mom and dad had no clue where I was and what I was doing. But now today, I can call my kids and say, "Where are you? What you doing?" And if they answer the phone, then I'll know. But you know, a downside of all of these devices that allow us to communicate is that we've really done a couple of things to ourselves. One is that we're creating sleep deprivation. This is especially true of teenagers. If you think about maybe a quote average teenager's room, maybe they've got a TV and a laptop, maybe a gaming system, maybe a cell phone. Studies show you that when children go into the room and they begin to go to bed, they have these things on, maybe all of them, using them. And then slowly they'll begin to shut them off, but it's usually well past the time when their body has been knocking on their door and saying, "I need sleep." And so slowly they begin to disengage from all the electronic devices. They may shut off the TV and then finally the laptop, and then they get in bed, but when they're in bed, they don't stop. They're still texting. Any of you text anybody in the middle of the night? And you know who you are? You can't get a good night's sleep when somebody's calling you every 45 minutes or texting you every 10. And it happens. I know it. But the reality of it is that our kids then, or anybody that's doing that, and parents, you may be doing this too, but you can't get a good night's sleep. You can't drop into the REM sleep where you're actually getting restful sleep. You're in and out. You're just barely getting rest, and you wake up tired no matter how long you slept. That's because of these devices. That's because of our cultural decision to have, you know, a constantly connected society. We've also created something else with these devices, and it's distraction. Multitasking does not work. And the studies prove that out. If you multitask, you're doing two things poorly instead of one thing well. Now, I recognize that some of you do it pretty well. You mask that deficiency well. But the The net is you are doing multiple things and not very well. Isn't that the way it is when you have your cell phone and you're walking down the street, or you may be in a conversation with somebody and somebody texts you, what do you do? Where's my phone? You know, well, I've now just stopped this conversation to take another one that somebody has injected into my life. We are creating ADD in ourselves. We are taking that upon ourselves. When I think about my work day, and it's an expectation at work that I may be on a conference call, sitting at my laptop, typing a document, and I may have somebody texting me on my phone, and I may have three instant message windows open. All this activity is going all at the same time, and I don't have a choice to do one thing at a time. And it can be very frustrating to do eight things poorly and never one thing fantastic. But we have created that in ourselves, where our expectation is that we are going to do many, many, many things, and we can never focus upon one thing. Now, that affects us when we decide it's time to learn about the will of God. And all of a sudden, we can't sit for more than 2 minutes and read the Bible because somebody texted us, or I need to see what so-and-so is doing on Facebook, or that we have created this in ourselves. And it is this skill that we're losing because of technology. Now, it's because of the way we're using technology, right? We have allowed that to become the way we use it. We've allowed that intrusion into our life. I love the fact that we can communicate with one another. And it can be near instantaneous. And it can be across the world. I get that, and I like it. But still, we have to make a good decision. If you had the choice to do two things poorly or one thing well, what would you choose? Well, moms, I think you're in a unique situation, because I think God has given you the capability to do this type of thing because it's necessary for your nurturing of the home. And those of you with children tonight, know what, you're trying to listen and you're, you know, putting pacifiers in, you're taking care of it, and all that's happening, I get it. But given the choice, what would you do? We sometimes hand the reins over to our electronic devices and say, here, please take control. Because I don't want to deal with this, so I'll let you decide when I'm going to pay attention, when I'm going to think, and what's important to me. We have to be able to focus upon the important things. We have to be able to turn off the phone. We have to be able to shut off the laptop. We have to be able to push those things aside, as valuable as they are, the value that we put on them. They're not as important as other things that we do. And we have to continue to challenge that. I've got a handout. If I get some volunteers to hand this out, some of this is stuff that's not easy to give you all this information from here. So there's kind of some frequently asked questions, I think, related to this, because we've talked about several technologies. We have things that are going to enter our home and challenge us. And I'll make one statement here real quickly about the Internet. And I feel extremely strongly about this. And I put a note on here that says, if you're an adult, it's highly recommended that you have some type of a content filter on your Internet. Having pornography or some other challenge to your morality pushed in front of you is a very easy thing to encounter. And even if you think you're a mature, well-adjusted, nobody's going to influence me kind of person, you might be surprised. So I say it's highly recommended, and I'd like to be stronger, but I'll leave it there. But if you have children in your home, it is absolutely required that you have content filtering on your Internet access. I say that because I have children and I have seen it, and I know the influence that this can have, and it can be unexpected and it can be purely innocent, but it doesn't matter when the hook is set. It can be very challenging. So if you have the Internet in your home, please take that seriously. Be prepared to pay for that service, and it'll be worth every penny when you do that. There are some other things on here about what some of the maturity ratings are for television and movies and video games and that type of thing. You know, it's important for you to stop and think, what are my children consuming? What am I consuming? And look at the rating. These are a lot more detail you can get online about these things. But this gives you the general sense. Do I really want to buy this for my kids? Is this the kind of thing I want them to be consuming? This will have an impact in their life if I do this. The technology is going to be used for good or evil. Am I going to let it be for evil in my life and in my family? So there's some good maybe guidelines for you and good places to go to get some of this stuff or to do more research. To research movies, before you decide to engage in entertainment, is it the type of entertainment you want to be engaged in? Know something about the movie before you go. I didn't always do this, and I didn't have the resources available to me when I was younger that we do now, but there's no excuse now. If you want to know what you're going to see before you go see it, go do some reading. Plugged In Online is a great place to get information about what the content of the movie is and decide whether or not that's something you want to expose your children to or something you want to expose yourself to. Bottom line is, these ratings they don't fix everything. They just give you an idea. But when you read through these, you might be shocked at how much stuff you don't want your children or yourself exposed to are in some pretty innocent ratings. PG or G leaves opportunity for nudity, leaves opportunity for language. Is that what you want? Be an informed consumer and then make good decisions about it. 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter and 19th verse, Paul says, For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became a Jew, that I might win the Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without the law, as without the law, that I might win those who are without the law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. There's a lot of technological advances, and we may see in the future things that just drop our jaw. The question is, how will we use those things? Is it okay for us to look at something that's a good tool and then turn our back on it? I don't think so. What's your purpose in life here? Why do you exist on this earth? And what's your primary role as a Christian? Is it not to let your light shine? Is it not to spread the salvation that comes through Jesus Christ? And if you have a tool to do it, what's your excuse for not doing it? We have to be willing to look. We shouldn't fear any technology. It's a tool. Let's find the right tool for the job and then use that tool. I thought a lot about this, and I couldn't come up with a technology that I think was inherently wrong. It's how it was used. Now, you may come up with something, and I'd love to hear it if you do, but the more I thought about it, there's so many things that may be the right tool for our outreach efforts. So find it, choose it, use it, gain success from it. You know, if we go back a couple of generations, I think it was very common for us to use newspaper to communicate. We put ads in about the church, and we try to encourage Bible studies and the church attendance and that type of thing. But if you're still doing that today and that's your only means of communicating, realize what you're doing. You have chosen only to market yourself to older adults and a shrinking population. Because newspapers are going out of business. Nobody reads newspapers anymore. What do they read? They read the internet. They go online and they get their news. They go online and they insert term here. They do it online. So if you're still thinking about things the way you did two generations ago, that is the means, the technology that I should be using to let my light shine, you're probably missing the boat. And if you want to expand your message to get it to more people, then you're going to have to begin to do things on the internet or other things. I'm not focused entirely on that. I just want you to see the difference between those two. Technology has changed enough that we have to change in those ways as well. There's a lot of decisions we have to make about what to implement and what not. We have to make sure it's the right decision, but we shouldn't go into it with fear. Many times we're uncomfortable with technology because we don't know much about it, and so we kind of hide from it. I just don't know anything about that, so just keep it over there. I just don't want to know. It's too hard. That's when you get Doug and you call his computer technician and you find out more about things, right? It's important for us. If we had the chance to do a fantastic job of spreading the light, would you do it? If it meant that you had to read a book or talk to somebody, or would you do it? You know you would. And this is no different. Educate yourselves so that you can use something to further the will of God. O Timothy, guard what is committed to your trust, avoiding the profane and idle babblings and contradictions of what is falsely called knowledge. By professing it, some have strayed concerning the faith. We can't let science or technology or advances in those areas to shake us in our faith. All the things that we think are such great dramatic advances in mankind's thinking are as nothing to God. And I think it is a temptation for us because it feels like God is so far away from us. He's not speaking to us like he did in centuries past. And we have everything we need, but he's not as personal. He's not as close to us. He's not as visible. We can't touch Jesus. So when somebody says, I've got 3 master's degrees and a couple of PhDs, and I tell you that, it's easy for us to go, well, oh, he's smart. He must know what he's talking about. And I now question the things that I believe because God told me. Because somebody that I can see that's real here is telling me something. And that's what Paul is telling Timothy. Don't let all these ideas about knowledge, people who think they know what's going on, dissuade you from your faith. So anytime a scientist tells you that they disagree with the Bible, if you can't refute it, just sit and wait. Wait until they do a little more research, they do a little more thinking. And pretty soon, it may take a generation or two, but at some point, they will be proven wrong, and your faith in God will be proven right. Don't let our idea of technology or science or entertainment or media or society make us follow after the God that limps. Something powerful, but something imperfect. Every tool is two-edged. You think about using a kitchen knife. It's a great tool. But you don't pick it up by the blade and use the handle to cut with, right? You pick it up by the handle. You protect yourself from the sharp parts. And then you use it to benefit. Same is true with technology. I would encourage you not to be afraid. Use it for the glory of God.